maybe he's trying to flip the coin, which would be interesting, where the world's like, is this guy for real? When Superman shows up, like, he's not killing them. He's not wiping these people out. They're bad guys. That's what superheroes do. And he's like, no, that's not what superheroes do. That would be awesome.
This is like a weird analogy of a, it sounds like Superman is coming in like the Ted Lasso of the superhero world.
No,
very, very upbeat, positive,
correct.
Inexperienced.
Well, he's inexperienced only in soccer, but yes.
Right.
But no, that's exactly it.
We have a Supergirl.
Boy, do we ever.
I take it you're familiar with this actress, Millie Alcock?
I've only seen her in the thing that everyone knows her from these days.
House of Dragons.
And yeah, House of Dragons, which I only watched. It's not that it was bad. It's just weird that since those were based not on the novels, it's like, and it's all prequel stuff. I was like, why would I be invested? We all know where this ends. So I watched maybe 4 or 5 episodes of the first season, and it's handsomely done, really good cast, and she was very good. I never looked at her once and thought, hey, she could be Supergirl. But I think, again, he's being smart. He's cast someone who will do a really good job because she's a good actor. And I know the story they're basing it on, and it's not a typical Supergirl story. She's great. In it, but it's also a side of Supergirl you haven't seen. And I think what James Gunn's trying to do by basing it on that, he really wants Kal-El to be this and his cousin to be a different person who they love each other. And, you know, but that storyline, Woman of Tomorrow, is basically True Grit in space with Supergirl being like Rooster Cogburn. Like, she's like, Jesus, okay, I'll get involved in this girl's life. She wants to get revenge on this. It's in space. It's an alien girl who basically hires Supergirl to get revenge for her father's death. And it's Supergirl has turned 21, and she has left Earth so that no one knows it's her. She's disguised her S and all that stuff. So she's getting drunk in like space bars. And she's like going, I'm of age, but no one on Earth would accept me doing this stuff. So I'm she's out there kind of like having a wild weekend in space. And it's good because it does make her own character. And she still ends up being very heroic. But it is a thing where it's like, she feels a little repressed under the shadow of her goody-goody two-shoes cousin. That's kind of the take.
So in James Gunn's continuity, which we don't know what it is yet.
We just don't. Hints.
Well, in that continuity, and is it Tom King who wrote the wrote the novel? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that continuity, how long when the story starts? How long has she known Clark? Or Kyle.
Well, I mean, Tom King wasn't putting it in any specific timeline. In other words, it's accepted that she has been Supergirl for a long time. Okay. And Superman. I think that in the current DC continuity, unless I'm wrong, they have stuck with the idea, which was a later idea, that Supergirl is older than Kal-El. That she actually like babysat him as a baby. But the thing is that she was kind of, she was sent later, and because Clark came in as like a little baby, he grew up on Earth, and his cousin was sort of preserved as she was hurtling through space. So she gets to Earth later, but physically, emotionally, she's older than Clark. So she's totally shocked to find him already being Superman, and she's like, dude, I changed your diapers. This is weird.
That's what I'm wondering is like, because that would be kind of cool to see, like if that's how it is in the movie, like he's
like
there,
more and almost then, a big sister. Oh,
and then
he's
maybe
already
she
there.
Shows up in a post credit scene, and or maybe there's hints of it or something, because that would be really neat. Or maybe the second Superman movie, she shows up for the first time.
Yeah, or I swear to God, she's going to be a button scene, even though they've already announced her. Yeah, I think that they're announcing her. And we're aware, but they're not ready to shoot that Supergirl movie. I think that it's just she'll show up probably at the end of Superman Legacy. Superman Legacy, as he said, isn't an origin movie, so it's not the beginning. It's early days. Yeah. So I don't think we're going to, but man, you know what would be awesome is if literally it's, but then they'd have to do a time jump. Because if the button scene was literally her arriving, they would have to do a big time jump to get to Supergirl, Woman of Tomorrow. But I kind of love the idea of a live action version of the classic comic book cover where she's popping out of the rocket and going like, I'm your cousin. And he's like, what?
Yeah.
But anyway, I that's nerd dream. At the same time, the size of the Superman Legacy cast, I just keep going, is everyone just going to be walking through a door going, hey, man.
Yeah.
It's like, Metamorpho, cool to see you. All right.
That'd be great if there's just one scene where they're just coming in and out. Oh, hey Clark.
Oh, hey. You're going to a... Oh it's, doing, you guys man? Have a meeting? Cool to see you. I don't know how their universe is going to work, but I think he is clearly trying to make a point that this has been a superhero universe for some time, which means I think in Gunn's universe, Superman is a newcomer and not like the original, which the comics have done that too, because they want to have their World War II heroes around. They want to have Justice Society, and I have no problem with that. But to do that, that means that Superman came much later, because they have to have Superman be 35 for all time. So it's like, yeah, he didn't show up in the 30s.
Right,
I always liked the idea of Superman being the original superhero, and then everyone followed after. But
that is like an Elseworlds thing. I would love to
Elseworlds.
See
Elseworlds. We could have called Elseworlds, this Elseworlds. This could have been the podcast name, Elseworlds.
Because I would love to see a story of Superman told on the screen that is set like in the 40s or the 50s or something back then. Just have it be a period piece. That would just be cool. So fun.
It would be.
You know?
Did you ever read the Tom DeHaven novel, It's Superman?
No.
Tom DeHaven is a legit, like, prose fiction author. But he clearly has a love of old comics and comic strips, because he's kind of messed with that stuff before. This is from years ago, but he got permission from DC to write a Superman novel, but he said it in 1938. Superman shows up in 1938. And so it is a early days of Superman, but chronologically accurate. So it's a 30s novel with Superman learning how to be Superman and working at the Daily Star instead of the Daily Planet and all this. And it's great. It's really good. It is an Elseworlds. It's totally because, you know, it's an actual novel, not a graphic novel.
Yeah.
But also, it is exactly what you're talking about, because it's, you know, set during the Depression, and it's historically pretty accurate. At the same time, he has come up with a completely unique Superman story. It just happens to be set in that period. So, and there's no winks to Batman, I don't think, or anything like that. It's just, it is Metropolis. I think it is. Or did he change it to New York? It might be New York instead of Metropolis, but it's recommended. Oh. That wasn't a Brendan recommending, but I'll put that in there anyway.
So have there been, I know that there were Superman comics coming out during the war, right? No, wait, it was after the war. There were
No. Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman are the only three superhero characters that have never not been published. So DC does have that going for it, because even a lot of the timely characters like Human Torch, the original Human Torch, and Namor, the Submariner, started before the war, lasted into the war, and then the 50s, superheroes died out. And it had nothing to do with the war. It had to do with like comics code and various things. And so everything became romance comics, sci-fi comics, cowboy comics. The only three superheroes that even were being written and published during the 50s were really Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman.
Okay.
And then in the 60s, the Silver Age came back in, and we had new versions of all of those characters, and Marvel kicked off, and then you had Fantastic Four and all that, blah, 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 blah.
I know that in The Watchmen, we had the depiction of what the Vietnam War might have been like with superheroes present. Have there ever been any Elseworlds stories in DC that have kind of gone back to retell that period in history? Like, well, what would have happened if Superman was around during the World War?
And weirdly, enough, no.
What have that changed, if anything? Because you would think that,
yeah,
you know, like in stories like The Red Sun and things like that,
there are a lot of great, you know, alternate.
He single-handedly might have the power to end the war, you know, if he wanted to be a dictator.
There have been, there was an Elseworlds, damn, I can't remember the name of it, which had Superman becoming a super dictator, basically saying, like, I can fix all the world's problems because I'm Superman, and just do what I say and everything will be fine. And I can't remember the name of it. Elseworlds, for those of you who don't know, listeners, is basically DC's What If. And basically alternate takes, alternate realities where this or this happened. And a lot of them are goofy. Some of them are great. Like, I did like Speeding Bullets, which was the one where Kal-El's rocket lands in Gotham, and it's Thomas and Martha Wayne who raise him. So when they are killed, he becomes Batman, but his Batman outfit still has like this shield, but it has the bat in it, and he's a superpowered Batman. So it's just like, what if Superman were Batman, basically, that kind of thing. They did one where Batman ended up with a Green Lantern ring, and like called In Darkest Night or something like that. That was pretty cool. Anyway, but that sounds pretty heavy, and I don't think they've ever done that. What they have done is they've had one-off issues where Superman travels through time. So not in Elseworlds, but I think I remember one where he travels back to World War II. This is during the 80s, after John Byrne's reboot. And I think that it was an excuse for him to meet, like, Sergeant Rock. You know, he ends up meeting a World War II DC hero, and he's in the trenches, and he joins Easy Company. Maybe he's lost his memory, too, doesn't even know he has powers, so he fights. He's done that a few times, but as far as them addressing full-on, what if Superman had been around to stop the war, they have always come up with dumb reasons why the superheroes, including the Justice Society, who were operating World War II, why they didn't just go to Europe and wipe everybody. You know, the Spectre, the Spectre by himself, he is basically half God. It's like the Spectre could just walk over to Europe and pick up Hitler and go, boom. So, like, DC Comics and Marvel, both, they've always had these, like, dumb things like, well, during the war, they had to fight all these super villain Nazis, and they were too caught up in that to actually change the course of the war. Yeah. DC had this thing where Hitler got a hold of the Spear of Destiny.
Yes.
Which is the MacGuffin at the beginning of Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Right.
Which I kept going, woo, I know. Anyway, so in the comics, this is back in the 80s, Hitler gets a hold of it, and he uses the magic power of the Spear of Destiny to basically build this, like, protective magical barrier around Europe that keeps out all the superheroes. So literally, they all want to go. Like, the Justice Society is like, we're going to fight the war, and then they just, like, hit this barrier, and Hitler's like going, tee-hee, you can't do anything. Hitler, why didn't you use the magic power to just win the war, like, immediately? Oh, whatever.
It is anyway. A really interesting linchpin in trying to tell stories in that time period with these characters.
Or during any war. I mean, it's the same thing. Exactly. With, like, it could have been Vietnam, or, you know, it could have been Iraq or anything.
Which is like, because I was thinking about that when I mentioned, oh, it would be really cool to see a new reimagining of Superman in the classic era. But how do you address the war? And it's like, do I want to see that?
I've read interviews with some of the writers when that has come up. Because probably in those issues I'm talking about where they go back, where he's in back in time and stuff. Usually the thing is editors and writers say, yeah, that would be an interesting story, but it also would be disrespectful. They're like going, real people fought and died in that war. And the only reason we won, in quotes, or, you know, we've moved past it, is due to the sacrifice of real people. Mm-hmm. So to put it in the hands of a fictional superhero who could have literally ended the war in a day, that's disrespectful. So I think that's probably it. They'll dance around it, or they'll come up with a fictional war and make it just as gritty. And they show what happens when superheroes get involved, and they go, "See, it wouldn't work. See,
it would be." And I do agree with that.
Yeah,
that it would be disrespectful. At the same time, I just imagining what it'd be, how cool it'd be to see this. I don't know if I, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if I want to see the story, but just the visual of like a black and white movie and Superman descending down into a battlefield and bullets bouncing off of him. And,
I do think the scene in Wonder Woman, the first one with her crossing no man's land in World War One, you know, and the scenes in Captain America where he is, out there, and they do the newsreel footage of him actually doing stuff. That's as close as I've gotten. And that's like, that's pretty great. It's exciting. Yeah. And it would be cool. I think that there's a, well,
of course they avoided that problem by freezing him in ice. Yes. There's only so much he was able to do.
Well, yeah, he didn't finish the war. Right. He basically saved us all right at the end and got frozen in ice.
Yeah.
Speaking of getting frozen in ice, did you ever read, I'm just joking, did you ever read Siegel and Shuster's little like 2-page comic that they did about how would Superman end the war that they did for like Life magazine or Time magazine?
No.
It was maybe 1942. Superman, of course, was already huge. And in the comics, he was fighting saboteurs and Japanese, you know, secret agents and stuff. He was always on this side fighting like saboteurs and infiltrators and spies and occasional mad scientists. But he wasn't over there. So I guess they said, we get a lot of questions about what would Superman do to stop the war. And basically, it's this 2-page comic written by Siegel and drawn by Schuster. Superman just goes to Europe and picks up Hitler. Then he goes over to Italy. He picks up Mussolini and he brings them to the world court. And he basically goes, you guys are cowards because you have thousands of men dying for you. So why don't you stand up and tell the world, like, fight for your own ideals? And they're like, we're just too scared. We're just cowards. Oh, and then the world court goes, you're sentenced to jail. It's like war over. And it's like, he doesn't beat up tanks and stuff. He flies through, I think, like an air war, but he just basically shows up at their houses, grabs them, pulls them out and goes, now you have to answer for your own crimes. Yay, Superman.
And,
and they do end it with like, if only it were this easy. You know, they do like come back and go, unfortunately, it's not this easy in the real world. But Superman, of course, is fighting for truth and justice out there. And he's definitely on our side. As if that were in question. Come on. Mm-hmm. Come on. Anyway.
So the other thing that happened in the Superman Legacy casting world that we didn't talk about was the casting of Maria Gabriela de Faria, who is playing the engineer from the Authority comics.
Yeah.
So I don't know much about this, but what do you know about the engineer?
Well, I mean, what's interesting is that you, because I hadn't heard this, and then you said cast her as the engineer, the villain of Legacy, and I was like, oh, interesting.
Well, I'm not sure if that's true or not. That's what some people have
done. The engineer is, you know, part of the Authority. The engineer is essentially just that. Like, they all have these unique powers in the Authority. They tried really hard when they created those characters to make them non-typical superheroes. And so the engineer has this, you know, can speak with any mechanical thing and basically can control it. And the engineer doesn't do a lot of on-site fighting. She is bonded with the ship, which is a sentient being. So the ship that they fly from dimension to dimension in, she is one with it, but she is encased in metal, like chrome. So she's really cool looking and not villain, but the Authority is morally gray. So I could see them in a Superman context being somebody that Superman's like, I'm not really on board with how you guys are doing stuff, but they're not villainous. The Authority includes a Superman pastiche and a Batman pastiche. So I'm very interested to see if they're going to have Superman go up against Apollo, who's the Authority's Superman. and the Midnighter is the Authority's Batman. And the two of them are in a relationship. They're like a gay couple, which is, you know, great. But I just keep thinking with the Authority, I don't know how Gunn's going to play them. Are they going to be a threat, or are they just going to provide an alternate where Superman goes, we're on the same side-ish, but I'm keeping my eye on you. I don't know. I don't know.
Well, some people have speculated that it's going to be sort of like Kingdom Come, where you've got, well, obviously Superman's not coming out of retirement in this movie.
Yeah,
he's fresh on the scene. But is he like bringing like a...
Oh, I thought we
maybe talked, the world yeah. has become jaded to superheroes, and he's the one who comes and kind of livens,
yes,
kind of freshens things up, so to speak.
We speculated on this before, where the possibility is that, and it's an interesting and would be very James Gunn, is that the world is the Authority. Like, that is the what they're used to is a much darker, more complex form, and Superman arrives as he's the alternate. Instead of the other way. In the comics, it's always been the altruistic, optimistic thing was the original. And now, of course, everyone's jaded. And so that's why we get things like the Authority and so forth. It's like, dude, Superman doesn't even work. And so making Superman look uncool. And maybe he's trying to flip the coin, which would be interesting, where the world's like, is this guy for real? When Superman shows up, like, he's not killing them. He's not wiping these people out. They're bad guys. That's what superheroes do. And he's like, no, that's not what superheroes do. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, it would. Because that's where we are, Jimmy, in the superhero movie land that we live in.
Give us a call. We promise not to spoil anything for our listeners, but let us know if we're on the right track. By the way, also, Jimmy, can you help me with this? Because this just happened. I can't get... Oh, God.
Oh,
God. I can't hang up.
Yeah, because he's the guy to call when your hand gets stuck in your face.
God. Okay, there we are. We're better. Yeah, he is the guy. James Gunn, director, writer, guy who gets your hand off your face. That is a very cool take, if that's the take. And I found it interesting from the beginning that the mix of heroes that we're getting in Legacy is so mind-boggling. I can't predict the road map, because when you're talking about having Hawkgirl and Mr. Terrific and Metamorpho and the Authority and Supergirl, I'm just like, what? Other than me reading random DC titles off my shelf, I'm like, where does that happen? You know, how does this tie into first Superman story?
I just finished watching the final season of Ted Lasso, which I had postponed for a long time. I don't know if you're a Ted Lasso watcher. Have you seen?
Oh, yeah. No,
Okay, cool.
I was surprised to see that you hadn't watched it.
This makes me think of that. This is like a weird analogy, but it sounds like Superman is coming in like the Ted Lasso of the superhero world.
No.
Very, very upbeat, positive,
correct.
Inexperienced.
Well, he's inexperienced only in soccer, but yes.
Right.
But no, that's exactly it. The thing that, I mean, that's what everyone latched onto. Ted Lasso is a combination of being really well done, but also it came out at exactly the right time. People kept commenting because it was during the pandemic, basically, that Ted Lasso comes out. Mm-hmm. But it was such an optimistic, upbeat character who has flaws. He's struggling with stuff, but at the same time, he's got this very likable moral compass that you sit there going, I wish I knew a Ted Lasso. Everyone just sits there going like, this guy, even for all of his struggles, is this positive force. And it's not at all weird to make the Superman connection. Cause when I was watching, I was sitting there going like, it made me feel good. Audiences are responding to a character that's like this and not mocking him because he's written smartly. He is, and he's not stupid. He is just positive. And it's like, you can do that without the character coming off like an idiot. There's too often that if you have a character who's a good guy, they like to play him as being kind of dumb and naive. And the thing about Ted Lasso is the guy's not naive. He has chosen to look for good in everything. And you're like, that's what I want Superman to be. And this is me doing meta thinking, and I'm probably completely wrong. I think that slowly that shift is happening, not because of Ted Lasso, but Ted Lasso is a good indicator. Because you know about the game that just came out, Suicide Squad, Kill the Justice League?
No, no.
It's a big game. It's a, as in a big company, DC licensed it, the WB signed off on it. They've been working on it for years and it just came out. People have a lot of complaints about it, but the biggest overall complaint that we're seeing online, though there are snarky people going like, what did you expect? The name of the game is Kill the Justice League. But the reviews are tanking it mostly because it's apparently well written, but it's just ugly. Like, people don't like the concept is Brainiac ends up mentally controlling the Justice League. And so all of your greatest heroes are now villains. And the only way to stop them is to kill them. And so the government gets the Suicide Squad, most of the characters from the movie. So you've got King Shark, you've got Deadshot, you've got Harley Quinn, you've got Captain Boomerang. I think they are the main characters. And you end up playing them. And the job is you go from one Justice League member to the other, killing them. But a lot of fans are sitting there going like, fuck you, man. It's like, yeah, maybe people thought, oh, well, they have to take them down and then they come back or something. In this game, you literally kill Flash, kill Green Lantern, kill Wonder Woman, kill Superman, kill Batman. And it's the guys who are doing it they're happy because they've been given license to kill their enemies. There's a scene after they kill the Flash. I have not played the game and will not, but I mean, it didn't sound like it was going to be fun for me anyway, but when they kill the Flash, Captain Boomerang pisses on his corpse. Harley Quinn literally walks up to Batman, who's basically beaten sitting on a bench, and just caps him in the head, shoots him in the head. Superman gets taken down. I mean, it's just like, and then apparently there's a epilogue thing that's just text. It's like, it took a while, but Flash's metabolism was, and it's like, so, and they think they might be able to bring back the others. They do this like tag at the end of the game going, yeah, they might be coming back. But the whole thing, people are finding disrespectful and ugly. And you get a lot of reviews online of people like going, oh man, I love that part in that game where first you shoot Superman and that part where you shoot Flash, and then the Suicide Squad, they shoot Green. Because they're like going, in no real world. Oh, catch me. I'm an idiot. In no DC accurate world would you be able to do that stuff. They also have a scene with King Shark getting Green Lantern's ring and putting it on and somehow being able to use it. And again, you have comics fans going like, that's not how the Green Lantern rings work.
Yeah.
So anyway, that is an ugly game. I don't wish the people who made it any, you know, I don't want you to lose your jobs or anything, but the temperature, it doesn't seem like people really wanted a game where the whole point is to destroy these great heroes. Playing the Suicide Squad, a bunch of roguish villains, could be fun. But yeah, maybe that's not what people wanted. They also jump through the multiverse and kill multiversions. Like that's the DLC for the game, is they're going to keep releasing. Like, now you get to go to a different universe and kill a different version of Superman. Awesome. How many times can I kill Superman? So anyway, and again, this is me just watching the discourse. I'm not pretending to be an expert in the game. I haven't played it. It sounds, and I like the company. They're the guys who did, it's Rocksteady. They're the guys who did the Arkham games. So, and it's Kevin Conroy voicing Batman. That was his last job voicing Batman, was in this game where they kill Batman. And you're like, oh, God damn. Which, of course, they couldn't have known he was going to pass, but still, it's just like,
yeah.
So it leaves a bad taste in my mouth. The only thing that gives me encouragement is the fact that other people are going, hey, WB, how about we get a game where the heroes are the heroes in it? Because if you look for, I know you're probably not much of a gamer, all the games we've had that are DC based for years, they've either been pretty awesome Batman games, some better than others, where he's being Batman. And then the others are all the Injustice games, where, again, it is alternate reality versions of Superman, Batman, all the classics, and they're all evil. So it's a mm-hmm. fighting game, because what you've always wanted to do is have, like, Wonder Woman beating the shit out of Green Lantern. You're like, no. How about a game where these characters work together? A Justice League game would be fucking awesome. Or a Superman game, finally, because they've, like, barely ever had Superman games. How about you do one that's respectful and it's fun to play? And he saves people and beats on Brainiac. Is that too much to ask?
I know.
Hello? I have a PS5. Please get to work on a game like this very soon. There is a Wonder Woman game in the works that is literally just supposed to be a respectful, like, you know, it's Wonder Woman and you just play as Wonder Woman. That's supposedly a few years from now, but I'm excited. Like, that's awesome. She deserves
good.
It. Good. Anyway, yeah. So, yes, I hope that the public in general is getting tired of the anti, like, oh, dude, there is nothing more awesome than when Spider-Man tears a spine out of someone's back. You're like, no, I don't want that. I want him to be a nice man. Can I have a nice superhero?
Hello. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, it would be very fitting and not surprising, actually, and kind of cheeky if that is the direction that James is going, because obviously we're coming out of the Snyderverse.
Well, the thing is, now it is the kind of punk thing to do is present a character who is altruistic, because we've had nothing but these grim and gritty and sort of this ain't your mama's, you know, fill in the blank. It's like, oh, you think you knew Dazzler? You don't know Dazzler. And it's her, like, burning people with her light powers or something. No, yeah, maybe we kind of want some superheroes again who are heroic.
Speaking of Ted Lasso again.
Great show. Loved it.
God, it's so good. And I recently learned, because I'd never watched any interviews with Brent Goldstein before,
yeah.
The guy who plays Roy Kent and is also the writer. I didn't know that he was not the writer. He's one of the writers on the show.
Yeah, he's one of the co-creators.
He was a writer. He was writing it before he was cast as Roy. He actually was the one who pitched himself as Roy.
I know.
Like, guys, I think I'm Roy. They eventually agreed with him. Yeah, you are.
What I love about that is that
he's so great. Because it is a character. You see him in interviews. He sounds nothing like Roy Kent.
Nothing like it.
He's just like a regular guy. And Roy's, you know, just like his almost like his dark alter ego.
It's amazing that it's almost like they just didn't see him as anything but because he's the writer guy, and then he's him like going, I kind of want to take a stab at Roy, and they're like, what, are you crazy? Fuck.
Yeah.
Fuck. Is it
Brett Goldstein? Okay, not Brett.
Yeah, Brett. Goldstein, and he's also Hercules.
Oh, okay.
You saw at the end of Thor Love and Thunder.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one of the button scenes. It's like Zeus says, like, I'm going to send, you need to go to Earth and take care of that guy. And it's just a tease. And he stands up and he's got kind of the headpiece that we know from the Marvel Hercules. And it's Brett Goldstein. And
he's in the MCU.
I think he got a little bit bulked up just because it's you see him for 2 seconds. But I'm like, I was very excited. I always loved in the Marvel comics when Thor and Hercules would throw it down. That's awesome. But just the fact that it was Roy Kent.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to fuck him up.
I was about to say, I would love to see Brett Goldstein in the new DCU somewhere.
Yeah.
Playing what character? I have no idea. I just love that actor. I want to see more of him. I just think it would be super cool.
I will say, since they did such a good job of casting and they got so many great UK actors that we don't know, that was another thing where, I mean, Hannah Waddington, she's had a long career. It's just that we over here aren't that familiar with her, but the UK knows her and she has this, you know, singing career as well. Mm-hmm. But now she's the It Girl. She's going to be in the next Mission Impossible. I mean, it's like, awesome. Yay, Hannah Waddington, you know, this giant, gorgeous woman. And she's like going, God bless Ted Lasso, because now she's world famous and she deserves it. Juno Temple, we already pretty much knew. She was in a bunch of stuff. She was amazing in this season of Fargo. This latest season.
My mom was telling me about that. I haven't seen it yet. Yeah.
It's so good. And yes, Juno Temple is amazing in it. they get a lot of British actors doing good Minnesota accents for Fargo, because, you know, we already had Martin Freeman, we had Ewan McGregor doing two people in one season. It was great.
I do want to say a happy note. Well, I'm going to remain skeptical and tentatively excited about this, but my wish, we've talked about Still Making Sense on the show before, and how pissed off I was about the remixes and how I don't like them, especially the theatrical remix. Yeah. So they've just announced that, expected in May of this year, there's going to be a collector's edition of Still Making Sense coming out on Blu-ray. There's two different versions. It's going to be like your regular HD Blu-ray, and then also a 4K.
In the 4K, yeah.
There's going to be extras on it, including there's going to be a making of, I think a brand new making of documentary.
Oh, that's cool.
But also they're going to include, they say, in it, the original 1984 stereo mixes that I miss so much. What I'm hoping that is actually the theatrical thing, and they're not just throwing the album mixes on there as bonus tracks or something. I'm pretty sure what they mean, that it's going to be, because they didn't mention it's the movie. You know, they're not talking about the album.
Right.
So that's tremendously exciting. What I am going to be really surprised, though, is if they give us that, I'm going to be really surprised and happy if they leave in the thing that Chris France is still so embarrassed about, which is the too much of that goddamn Snow White. That when we recorded that show, I wasn't really sure why they changed that line in the movie, but it's interview. You can see in interviews, it's pretty obvious that he's the one who's embarrassed by it. And
it wasn't like a studio interference thing. It was him literally going, can we take that?
It's out? All Chris just being embarrassed about it by his younger self, which is, I understand you should be embarrassed by yourself.
That's what we were talking about at the top of the show.
Let it be. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Easily embarrassed by younger me. younger me came by the other day and totally just, I was like, fuck you, dude. It was cringy. I was cringer.
Yeah. I was very, very sad to hear about Carl Weathers. So that was apparently just very, very sudden. Like, he wasn't like in the hospital or anything. He wasn't sick. So
actually,
he just tweeted the day before he died, he's got all kinds of happy tweets and on his Twitter account. He's just being as active as he always was.
Well, I actually think that's a good way for Carl Weathers to go, just because the idea, I was thinking, just flashing back to like when Muhammad Ali died, there was a long decline, and for someone who was so powerful, and obviously I was thinking about Muhammad Ali, because you think about Carl Weathers, you think about Apollo Creed and that sort of thing. And in real life, Muhammad Ali, better and bigger than Rocky or Creed, this like godlike dude. And by the end of his life, it's just sad. And you're like, the idea that Carl Weathers was up and feeling positive and whatever, and then passed. I like that better. You know, he didn't have a decline, and he gave us really great stuff right up to the end, man. Mandalorian. Yeah. He was great.
Yeah. Great. And I was just always just so struck with this, what a just cool dude he was, you know. He's just very
well. That's the thing,
positive.
Is that when we were kids, and of course he was mainly known as Action Guy, and had done he had done Action Jackson, but I mean,
yes,
he was Apollo Creed, and he was that figure, and in like all these films, he's that. What I loved was later when they allowed him to be funny, when someone's like, you realize that Carl Weathers is really funny. And then I was like, oh, what a great second career path. Because he's great in Happy Gilmore. He's great in, was it Happy Gilmore? Yes. I always get the Billy Madison and Happy Gilmore mixed up, but it was Happy Gilmore. And, of course, Arrested Development. Arrested Development, where he's playing himself, a version of himself. Oh. So damn funny. Did you watch it?
I did watch, I guess, and maybe I didn't see that whatever season that
was. He would pop in occasionally. He was a running. The gag is that Tobias, who David Cross's character, Tobias, who's a wannabe actor, his acting coach, he's been paying for lessons from the Carl Weathers. He attends like the Carl Weathers acting school. And so Carl Weathers comes into these party scenes playing himself as Tobias's coach. But the gag is his acting classes are kind of a scam. And he keeps like going, oh, Tobias is coming along. He's coming along. And of course, the idea, Tobias is horrible, obviously. He's like, oh, he's really good. But the joke also is that Carl Weathers is kind of living very cheap. And every time he goes to like the rich party, he's like pocketing, he's like putting hors d'oeuvres in his pockets. And then he's like going, he goes up to people. He goes, "You gonna finish that spare rib?" They're like, "Oh, I'm all done." He goes, "You know what you ought to do? You save the bones. You throw that in a pot with some water and a potato. You got yourself a stew." And the "you got yourself a stew" thing keeps coming up. Like later on, he's like going, "You know what? You take this. You put it in the thing." He's like, "You got yourself a stew." So, yeah. And then of course he comes back as a badass in Mando. So, that guy's career, it's not like I followed everything he did, because like a lot of working actors, he did a lot of B movie crap. Mm-hmm. At the same time, he was a good presence, a great presence. And when he was Apollo Creed, that arc of his being like the bad guy, then respecting, you know, respecting Rocky, and then dying tragically, like, that's a pretty awesome arc that he got, as you know, just a couple of movies. It's cool. And then of course I liked the Creed movies where it's, you know, his son. Yeah.
Okay. I never saw those.
Really good. Surprisingly, if you can get anything to shove the other Rocky, the later Rocky movies out of your head, is good. So it's like watch Rocky IV and stop, and then start watching Creed. Yeah.
Okay. And how many Rockies were there?
Like no. Well, I think there were seven, and the last one was the one. Remember, he did both of his characters with the full names. Like he did Rocky Balboa was Stallone's like Rocky VII, where he admits that Rocky's gotten old and all that stuff, and it's more of a drama. That one's good. Okay. But like Rocky, you know, 5, 6, terrible. Yeah. No. So, R.I.P. Mr. Weathers, and he never let us down. I think John and I talk about this a lot on our podcast when we talk about terrible movies. Some actors are just so great that they don't phone it in. Like, they know they're doing shit, but whenever you watch their performances, even in terrible movies, you're like going, he has no reason to be that invested and good, but there he is. And I think Carl Weathers is one of those guys where he never, you don't watch him in even a terrible movie and go, "Oh, he checked out like 15 minutes ago." He's there.
Right.
He's in it. And you're like, good on you, yeah, man. That's a pro. Yeah. And then, of course, sadly, we also lost after I had already declared him dead. We lost to Croft.
Yeah. After we accidentally said they were both dead. And then later.
Well, I did.
Twice. Well, and then I published it. I didn't check on it. You know, sometimes I'll fact check the things that we say.
fact checking? What's that?
You know, but the benefit of not fact checking is that people will come and correct us.
Which is they will.
The algorithm. Correct us, please.
Robin, keep writing notes.
But previously, notes, when Paul Reubens died last year, and Sid posted about it without saying, just showed a picture from them walking from behind, and I thought it was his brother then. So now it actually is his brother. So yeah,
it's you know, again, we've talked about it before. That stuff is incredibly cheesy. It's incredibly dated. At the same time, it was bedrock for our childhood. It was exactly what was in our veins. And I love Sid and Marty Croft. You watch this stuff now and you see just how cheap and weird and not great it is, and it's still comforting. Right now, I could watch an episode of Land of the Lost. I could do it right now, and I would probably enjoy the hell out of it, because for one thing, they didn't overstay their welcome. All their stuff is real short. Like, even a full episode of, like, the original Ghostbusters, you know, it's like, that's not them. But those shows that they did were all, like, 15 minutes. The Croft Super Show is made up of multiple little episodes. So if you weren't a fan of like Wonder Buggy, you'd be like, "Oh, I just got to hang on a couple of seconds because Electra Woman and Dinah Girl are coming up."
Yeah. Yeah.
So good stuff. And that's what we get. We get older and they're just going to continue to go away and die. And it's sad. All of our heroes, you sit there and go like, "Oh," and yet, have you watched that documentary on Netflix about the We Are the World recording session?
No, I think. Did you mention that once before?
No. I mean, I may have mentioned its existence last time, but I hadn't watched it until like a couple of nights ago. It's called The Greatest Night in Music, or The Greatest Night in Pop Music, or something like that. It's on Netflix. It's great. It's all behind the scenes footage of them putting it together and interviews with people, you know, like Lionel Richie comes out. Lionel Richie's very funny and he remembers stuff really well. And he does plenty of Michael Jackson impressions. Funny. But he's got weird plastic surgery. Sorry, man. You didn't need it, Lionel, but it's like he looks odd. At the same time, the mind is really sharp. What blew me away is they're interviewing a lot of the people, including Springsteen. I love the way it's like Springsteen agreed to be interviewed, and it's like out in a barn. I mean, it's just what you'd expect. Like, he comes in, he's wearing like a blue jean jacket, and they filmed him enter this thing, which looks like a barn, and he just sits down in this wooden chair. He's like, yeah, man, that was a crazy night. And you're like, okay, great. It's exactly the way you want Bruce to be interviewed. Everyone else is being recorded, filmed in the studio at A&M where they recorded. So they returned to that place. And the one that blew me away, there was a point to the story. Smokey Robinson is still alive. Oh. And it just that, because you'll lose someone like Carl Weathers and you're like, that's too soon. It feels too soon. And then you realize that a classic early rock giant, like, you know, Smokey Robinson is still alive. He's 83 years old and he sounds exactly the same. Probably has had some work done. Not as weird as Lionel, but also I'm just sitting there going like, dude, Tears of a Clown. I'm like, you're alive. It just blows me away that you'll find some like rock star from the 90s is still kicking. Let's make sure Jerry Lee Lewis is actually dead.
Rockstar from the what, though? You said
no,
you didn't mean
like
to say 90s.
From the early days of rock, you know, that they're still alive. You're like, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And then you'll have, sadly, people passing in their 50s and 60s that it's like, what's that about? Don't do that. Stick around.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty fairly recently that we lost Chuck Berry and Little Richard. It was like in the past five years, both of them.
That's very true. I mean, they both hung in there a good long while, which
Jerry Lee Lewis as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Jerry Lee Lewis. That's why I was saying we should check on him because make sure he's actually dead.
Oh,
I love his music, but he was a frightening figure.
He was a weirdo. Yeah.
Yeah. He may have actually killed people. So the killer was not just a fun nickname.
I didn't. Okay.
Wow. And
cool.
On that happy
note, moving
on. Here's my recommendations, real quick.
Okay.
One of the best movies I've seen in a long time, thank you, Kate, is Poor Things, which, of course, Emma Stone's going to win all the Oscars. It's great. If you guys haven't seen it, of course, I think it's back out in theaters because of the Oscar buzz. So this isn't like a hot take. Everyone has seen it. It's like, that is one of the most unique movies I've seen in a long time. It's funny. It's imaginative. It's sassy. But really, it's just a tour de force for Emma Stone and Willem Dafoe and Mark Ruffalo doing some of the best work of their careers. It's a steampunk feminist sort of a lady power movie. Take on the Frankenstein story. It's almost indescribable, but I loved it. So go see Poor Things. And also watch Monsieur Spade on AMC, which
say
is
one more time.
Monsieur Spade.
Spade. Okay.
It is set in 1960s, early 1960s France, and Clive Owen is playing the detective Sam Spade from the Maltese Falcon. But this is at the end of his career when he's an old dude pottering around in France. So it is like a sequel to the Maltese Falcon. Beautifully shot. It has, of course, a detective story, a mystery in it. But Clive Owen he's still a handsome man, but now he is fully middle-aged or older. So he looks like a worn-down Sam Spade. And he's been told he can't smoke anymore, and that's a big thing for him. And he still talks like he was the 1930s Sam Spade, but he's involved in this murder mystery in France after he's retired. It's so good. It is so good. And Clive Owen's bringing it. It's beautifully shot, very well written. It's a little slow, it's doing a kind of a hero in Twilight story. So it's not, it's like with Dial of Destiny. Some people are like going, oh man, it's an old dude running around. I'm like, guys, it's just great. It's like fan fiction. What if Sam Spade retired to like a beautiful French town and still had to deal with a murder mystery? So big recommendations from Brendan. There you
okay. go. Okay. Nice.
And on that,
I think we're done.
Yeah, we're done. I'm going to eat lunch. How's that sound? Sound good?
Sound pretty good. Sounds pretty good. I'm going to go have dinner with my mom and our friends, Bill and John.
Yeah, but are Chicago. You going to have mac and cheese? No. This guy will.
God damn it.
Aha! Anyway, thanks for watching us talk about stuff. So, write us. Tell us what we're doing right or wrong.
Yeah, please.
Tell us what we should do with our lives. Tell us now.
We love it when we're corrected.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
that's over and over again.
More notes, Robin. More notes.
More notes. All right. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.
Peace apps. Oh.
Yeah.